Welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. To interact with us, you can send questions and comments to our Facebook page, YouTube page. It's always fun to see the chat lit up, but remember, your chats may show up on the show, so keep your comments on the level. And as always, if you can't catch us live, catch the replay or in your favorite podcasting app, you know me, John Ruark, Passmaster of the Patriot Lodge, number 1957 in Fairfax, Virginia. And let's see. Next up, Robert Johnson. How's it going?
Well, it's going, guys. It's going. Happy to be here. Robert Johnson, Passmaster of Waukegan 78 and the sitting secretary over at Space Novum. No, I'm the master at Space Novum Lodge 1183. I forgot. Scott Duball is the amazing secretary over there. But anyway, good to be with you guys. And yeah, looking forward to the conversation.
How quickly we forget.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least for tonight, Jason Richards. Good evening, Jason.
Hey, everybody. Good evening. Jason Richards here, Passmaster of Acacia Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia. Rush Chairman Dam, glad to meet you.
Nice. Awesome. 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 All right. Jumping right into it. Special shout out to support the patrons who support us, patreon.com/themasonicroundtable if you want to chip in. And we've had some really good conversations, actually. Was messaging one of our patrons this week about some research topics that they're looking on. They were trying to get some more information for an upcoming presentation. So I said, hey, here's my notes. Let's compare notes. So that's always fun to nerd out with a fellow bro on Masonic education. And so, yeah, if you want to be able to nerd out on all the weird stuff that Robert likes to talk about, become a patron, support the show. So thanks. What else we got coming up, Jason? What's kind of the next thing we talk about?
Esotericon?
Yeah, let's talk about Esotericon.
Yeah, Esotericon is coming up here June 15th. Excuse me. It's going to be great. We've had 4 speakers revealed so far.
So far.
Yeah, so let's see. We've got David Hill, JPL, Matt Parker, the destroyer of hang gliders. And then I'm going to be speaking
Jason Richards,
which I think is highly ironic given the fact that, when we started Esotericon in, 2019, I specifically said, hey, I'll help, you know, put this together, but I do not want to speak, like, just leave me out of it.
Oh, how soon we forget.
And then, yeah, 5 years later, I'm like, okay.
But brand new presentation.
Okay, twist my arm.
Yeah. not only will I speak, but I'll speak on, you know, the medieval magical tradition. Like, dumb in like 5 years.
That's awesome.
Wait till you see what happens for our 10th year.
Really looking forward to it, you guys.
I will be the medieval magical tradition.
Jason's going to levitate on in. It's going to be great.
Yeah, like the Bram.
I'll be the golem.
Yeah.
Melting faces off.
Yeah, super looking forward to Esotericon this year, as I am every year. I think you guys always kill it. It's always amazing. And yeah, really looking forward to it. The other thing I would mention, it's too late to get tickets at this point, I think, if you don't have them. But if you're going to be up in Minnesota, I hope to see you guys all there at the Midwest Conference of Masonic Information Education happening next weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'll be heading up Friday morning with James Buckhorn, who is the chairman of education for Indiana. And we're going to go up there, hang out all weekend, and learn stuff. It's going to be great. So hope to see you all there.
Cool. All right. What's our next segment, Jason? What's your favorite part?
I don't know.
Tarot card of the week.
All right. Tarot card of the week. Awesome. This week's deck is one of the new ones that I just got off of Kickstarter. It is the Lighted Window Tarot from the Lantern Print Company. The artwork on this deck is gorgeous. This is probably the single best Kickstarter-based tarot deck that I've come across. And so, really, really pretty imagery throughout. Lots of colors. Yeah. Like
very nice. I like the way the shading is like on the leaves and very like calming.
Yeah, I'll take this out of the package. I ended up getting a print as well of the world.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's just really gorgeous mountain passage. And so this week, as we are moving into our What If series, it only seems natural that we pull out the Hanged Man, or in this case, the Hanged One.
Very cool.
There's a close-up of that card there. So the Hanged Man, focusing on a change of perspective.
Uh-huh.
Seeing things from a different angle. Maybe a little bit of trial and tribulation in there, too.
What if? Mm-hmm. Surrender and letting go.
Yes.
Don't fight it. That's cool. Yep.
Fight the feeling.
It's a good one for the What If series, absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for doing that.
No problem.
Let's get right into this week's topic then, which is, what if the Morgan affair never happened? So as a brief explanation, we have this gentleman, this brother by the name of William Morgan, who in 1826 disappeared, and mostly because of his threat to release an expose of Freemasonry. And there's been a lot of mystery around his fate ever since, and which has actually had trickle effects through Masonry, is still impacting Masonry as we know it today. And so as part of our series, and
politics in the United States.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's a lot of
ramifications in politics.
Exactly.
Like it contributed to the birth of the first independent third party in the United States.
Ever.
Yeah.
Thanks, Green Party. No, so we've done, I think, at least one episode on the Morgan affair, so go back and check that out if you want the actual historical impact. But remember, for those of you joining late, we are going to branch off into an alternate timeline, giving you a what-if scenario, a multiverse, as it were, if the Morgan affair never happened. So
if you want the real story as we know it today, check out episode 131.
Nice. Thank you.
No problem.
But as for now, join us as we now transform into the alternate branch where the Morgan affair never happened.
I thought we were going to do like the Wayne's World thing.
That works too. All I know is RJ promised to put something in on post.
Yeah.
Fix it in post.
We did, and we got a great TARDIS sound effects happening.
Yes.
So here we are in 2024, where Masonry is well and thriving, and just wanted to give a little history of how we got to where we are today with our proud populace fraternity that we have today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, since we're talking about William Morgan, we actually had to look up who that was. I guess there was a little kerfluffle that happened up in Batavia. He really wanted to write something and
misunderstanding, really.
Yeah. And maybe he, I guess they went out to dinner or something. They smoothed it over and he ended up being like the worshipful master of the lodge there and
good, just stable
standing member.
Good bro.
Yeah.
Not that memorable beyond that, right? Didn't really achieve much or achieve much notoriety. Well liked in his lodge.
Oh, sure. But at the same time, you know, had he not been, you know, recorded in the lodge minutes, we otherwise wouldn't have even known about him.
Exactly.
So mm-hmm.
Owed some debts, but you know, hey, we're nobody's perfect.
Yeah, and just kind of a bizarre thing. John, I happened to, it's kind of interesting, you know, as we opened the show, we were talking about where we were from and things. And, you know, Jason and I are, of course, I've been a past district deputy, worshipful master, and all of these things in Masonry. And you know, it took a long time to get there, obviously. Mm-hmm. How long did it take you guys? Like, I noticed you know, your lower third says fellow craft.
I'm proud to say I just got my fellow craft degree. So I'd been an EA for at least 9 years, right?
Yeah.
Because, what I like about the fraternity is that since everything meets on the first degree, once you become a brother, you can go to all the business meetings, right? You can go to all the functions. There's no rush to get you through the other degrees. I have time. I have plenty of time for that. I'm busy with being a father and all that, so I'll have time for that later. I know there's plenty of appendant bodies and stuff I could join. I'm in no rush, so yeah.
Well, if nothing else, it's nice not to get like thrown into an officer's line, right?
Yes. That is true. Yeah. I'm putting that off for another 9 years.
And it's nice too to just really have, you know, Blue Lodge Freemasonry.
Yeah, it's stable.
Yeah, it's stable. It's really the one game in town from a, you know, fraternal standpoint outside of like the Greek stuff in colleges. But you know, it's just nice to be very much kind of in the in crowd, you know, odd fellows aside, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, there's a couple of the games in town when I had decided to join a fraternity. You know, of course, the golden age of fraternalism happens, and there's all of these kinds of organizations that exist. But it seems as though throughout history, you know, I really, when I wanted to join something, it was like, I wanted to join something that had a rich American tradition, something that people trusted in the institution, something that wasn't questioned by the public for any kind of, you know, nefarious kinds of things that might be goings on. And I have to say that having a rich family history of both people in the craft of Freemasonry and also seeing the many, many people who have impacted and even in the political system,
right,
who have been Masons. It was kind of a no-brainer for me. And I'm just happy that, that they took me in.
Yeah. It's like motherhood and apple pie. It's like, it's goes with the bald eagle. It goes with just what America is all about. It's it's an honor.
Apple pie is originally French.
Get out.
Okay.
You and your facts.
Alternate facts.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we try to trace it, like what happens after this, this no name William Morgan, you know, does his thing, serves his time.
And, well, it was interesting because, you know, John Quincy Adams was in the presidency around this time. And the Democrats were running Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson was a Freemason. JQ Adams wasn't a Freemason. He just wasn't, he wasn't super hot on Freemasonry. but the cool thing is, you know, Andrew Jackson ended up, you know, winning, and that ended up being quite a boon for the organization. You know, we saw more and more presidents becoming Freemasons, and it,
right,
it really kind of bolstered the prestige of the organization, and it really turned us into, you know, not a political organization, but an organization that if you were in politics, you know, you really wanted to be a part of.
Yeah, exactly. There never was any, like, for example, like an anti-Masonic party. There was,
right,
there was really just a strong fraternalism. There was no decline in membership, right? There was no fear or rationality about the Masons being up to no good. It's always been on a steady incline, at least, you know, for the, you know, couple hundred years.
Up through about 30, 40 years ago.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We kind of maxed out on fraternalism then, you know, so that was about 1959. We had the peak of 14 million Masons. And so we've been on a slight decline, but it's been a much slower decline than you'd think, at least compared to the Elks and the Oddfellows.
Yeah. I think the only thing right now that's really kind of somewhat contributed to less membership joining is really just the standalone political nature that's going on right now with the United States. You know, we've got a country that's really divided in terms of, you know, different types of politics, you know, heavy on a religion side. Some are very heavy on the liberal side, or, you know, conservative and things of that nature. And so I think that's not generally touching the constituent basis. And so there's less of those types of people generally don't find themselves within Freemasonry. It's almost incompatible. So what's happened is, you know, people of that sort of political persuasion, they're not causing this sort of like, I want to be in politics, or I want to do this, that, and the other with Freemasonry in politics or whatever. As you said, you know, we're not a political organization, but certainly number of politicians over the years have made their indelible mark on the fraternity.
Absolutely.
Well, and you know,
good men all around. Else,
it has caused us to be a little bit more zealous about guarding the West Gate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we have all of these men who wanted to join because they felt like they had to in order to get ahead. And so, you know, we had enough members to be able to be picky.
But that's still that guarding the West Gate, because we had such a strong amount of fraternalism that it was still high. It could have been a lot higher had we not been proud of this institution. In fact, you know me, data guy. So crunch the numbers. I know we said we're a slight decline since 1959. And I've projected it out. And if everything, you know, if we don't change anything, we actually might end somewhere in 2140. So I just want to give you guys some time to know that we are declining. So let's do something about those numbers. Let's turn those around.
Yeah, I wonder how you can turn around numbers. I mean, you know, this is a big lead time. This is not, butting it up against something that's inevitable.
Have some time. I'll give you that.
You know, we've got more than 24 years, 25 years. So that's good. We have time to turn things around. I wonder what we would turn around.
Well, look, I get that John's obsessed with data. It's a slight decline. yes, it's been a trend, and I think you can attribute that trend to various, you know, socio-economical evolutionary things that have happened over the past 100 years. But we've got so many members still that, you know, I really need to raise the question again, you know, is this decline problematic? And is it, you know, is it emblematical of a lack of interest in Freemasonry, or, you know, are we
changing times
really, really well at guarding the entryways to the fraternity?
That is true.
It does beg the question, you know, what is the number of men within this fraternity that are the perfect number to keep it moving and that, you know, operational? So I look at our fraternity as something today that is very strong, is, as you pointed out, as American as apple pie, and is something to be very proud of. But yet, this decline, is this decline an indicator of just how strong our Westgate is? And there are just less qualified individuals growing up through the world? Are these truly a lack of interest? You know, certainly as the population grows, there's likely, you know, a static number of individuals who are predisposed to enjoying something like Freemasonry. And that percentage is going to grow with the population, but maybe not. In this instance.
Look, RJ, I think what has happened is we've become much more exclusive. And so,
because we can.
We can be. And so we, because of our exclusivity, basic economics, the demand outstrips the supply. Mm-hmm. As far as the spots that we have in our lodges. And again, I don't think that's a bad thing, as long as we don't get to the point where we alienate everyone, you know, and yeah.
Well, I think we do a good job at not alienating. I mean, specifically, speaking to the idea that, I mean, there are many, many more entered apprentices and fellow crafts combined than all Master Masons.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is an incredible sort of thing that that we have, you know, the top tier in Masonry, as you have it, is very small.
Now, Brother Patrick Tessier has a good suggestion here to help rectify this decline. What if we introduce something like 1 year classes, where you could go from entered apprentice all the way to Master Mason in 1 year? I don't know how you could like understand Freemasonry in that short amount of period of time.
It's certainly an interesting idea. I guess I'm left wondering why.
Yeah, I mean, it's a solution. We're still trying to figure out the problem, the root cause. But hey, you know, Brother Patrick, he's thinking ahead, so
definitely
I think it's worth considering.
Perhaps the only reason to do something of that nature would be, the only thing I can think of is to eliminate the number of times we have to open up on a different degree based on who is there. Like if everybody was already a Master Mason in a year, that would certainly allow us to operate a little more,
if we wanted to,
succinctly, with a single set of rituals.
Yeah. Well, actually, to that point, I'm glad you brought that up, because I had heard that a couple of years after William Morgan came and went, there was discussion amongst some Grand Lodges to actually hold a Baltimore convention to kind of discuss just things about some regularity with the rituals. I'm glad it never happened, because we have this rich tapestry of Masonry today. And I'm really thankful for that, because that didn't happen, they would not have imposed some of these maybe draconian rules, such as like requiring dues cards. That, I mean, it's a good thing, because I can still travel around. I still, you know, I'm a man of my word. You know, I can still be recognized with all the grips and tokens and everything. So there's really not a need for me to have dues cards.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, even as a district deputy grand master in the past, the only thing I ever had was just a patent that I had, piece of paper. It was folded up, and it was just a little letter from my grand master saying, you know, well, this is what I did when I did it. And fraternal greetings. It's funny you bring up this Baltimore convention. In prepping for the episode, I was kind of looking at some of the history that happened after this Morgan fella, and I came across this other guy, Rob Smith, who introduced some weird clandestine organization that he wanted to put out there. It was something Eastern Star, I think it was.
Rob.
That's the guy. Rob Morris.
Interesting.
Rob Morris. Yeah, that's the guy. What a weird guy, and what an interesting and sort of talk about draconian.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Freemasonry today can stand on its own. You know, we don't have necessarily other orders that are officially attached as some sort of like, you know, appendant order or you know, other body within Freemasonry. And so, you know, you had naturally Freemason hobbyists. You know, even back as far as the 1700s, you had the Bavarian Illuminati in Germany, where they tried to attach themselves to Freemasonry, but the organization fell apart within 13 years. And so you have hobbyists everywhere who want to try to get their own things, you know, attached to the gravitas of Freemasonry. But because of the exclusivity and the rich history, that really just never took off here in the U.S. One more thing I will say about the, you know, 1 year classes. Another reason to perhaps do that, Robert, is that that would follow more of the continental flavor of Masonry over in Europe. It is very, very common over in Europe to wait a year or so between the degrees. And so I could see that being perhaps a justification, but Americans have always liked to kind of do their own thing.
But again, you know, all work everywhere right now meets on the first degree. So no matter where you travel, it really doesn't matter. You know, another reason I'm glad that they didn't have this so-called Baltimore Convention in 1843 is we didn't really need a uniformity of ritual work. Yes, we've had a lot of influences. That's the beauty of how the colonies were formed, how the Grand Lodges were formed. And we had a variety of ritual. So we still have that beautiful system that, you know, you can travel around, you could see slightly different rituals today. And that gives us some, you know, just part of the rich history. Cause it'd be kind of boring if we all had the same ritual, right? If you went to California, if you went to Maine, you went to Florida, like that would be kind of stale if it's just one flavor of Masonry.
Yeah. I've got a friend of mine, Wayne, who has traveled, he's from Georgia. And he completed his Master Mason degree there after a number of years, 12 or 13 years or something like that. And once that had happened, he actually traveled to many different parts of Georgia where there were other types of ritual that had been in place since, the early 1800s, late 1700s. And he was actually part of a sort of like a candidate school, if you will, like a proxy to walk through a degree like an inspection for an Irish emulation version of the ritual, for what was a, as I understand it, a third degree ritual from something called the Rite of Perfection that came up from like the islands. And he got to experience all three of those in Georgia because of the ability to have different rituals without the need of a sort of, you know, locked, narrow system.
And also digging through what they were going to talk about at this Baltimore Convention of 1843, the last thing I found really interesting was, you know, if it had happened, they were going to introduce this concept of suspending Masons due to what they call, let me check my notes, non-payment of dues, and make that a serious offense. And so I've never heard of this like non-payment of dues thing, because, you know, you're once a Mason, always a Mason. We help each other out. If someone can't pay their dues, then like that's okay. Like, you, we have enough members. We have, you know, we have it built into our dues structure to help like take care of our own, because we are brothers. It's just not, it never became a thing, which I think is great, because, you know, why chase someone out just because they can't pay their dues? That seems really, really odd. Why would anybody?
I think people derive distinct value out of the organization too, where like,
yeah,
it would never cross my mind just to like stop coming and stop paying my dues.
Yeah, it's like,
it doesn't make sense.
Your Netflix subscription, right? You just keep paying it because it's still there, and it's like, well, I'm still using it, right? Same thing with Freemasonry. Like, there's no reason to turn it off. I mean, it seems really odd to take the extra step to leave Masonry. It seems really weird.
Yeah. Also, I don't even know how we would enforce something like that. Ostensibly speaking, without a dues card or some sort of notification. I mean,
you still got your patent from your degree. So.
The bell has been rung. You can't unring it. You know,
you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah. that was very interesting. Glad we don't live in that timeline.
So past 1843, again, as Jason said, Masonry remained strong, never had any dips in popularity or fear. Most of the presidents, you know, not just many, but more than half of the Masons, presidents were Masons. We've had lots of public displays of Masonry as far as statues, parades. Like, this is something that you kind of see everywhere. So I think that's good, because it just becomes part of American culture.
Robert has nothing else to say.
That's it. And Robert's out. Yeah. And so while most of our presidents have been Masons, I've heard rumors, I've heard whispers from some of the caucuses that they might be talking about creating the first ever third party called the Masonic Party. I mean, they figure, hey, why don't we just do what we already assume, that since most of the presidents have been Masons, we know that Masons stand for what's right and they're upright men. Why don't we just put a label on it? You know, we'll see how it gets implemented. Yeah.
That it steps us too close to being political. Thinking back to like P2 in Italy, where the Freemasons, you know, essentially tried to overthrow, you know, parts of the government.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least the Vatican.
So politics aside, another thing that I like about where we are today is, like, could you imagine a time where there was a negative perception of Freemasons. And with the rise of the internet, could you imagine like seeing like everybody's in the Illuminati kind of videos? Every other search term you look up for masonry on the internet is all about how they're devil worshipers, or they're, you know, they're worship the devil, or you know, eat babies, all that kind of stuff. Like, that would be really weird.
I could only imagine, you know, scrolling through something like social media and constantly being barraged by these sort of
hopping in your DMs.
Just, yeah, help me join. I don't even know, man. It's just bizarre to me. So crazy. I mean, it's bad enough I get nothing but, you know, feeds for the elk and the moose coming across my page all the time. You know, I get it. They want to have the same prestige that we have. Listen, I'm not biting you guys. I'm a one frat man.
So committed. I love it. And another thing I like about living in this time frame is how when I have my Masonic ring on, or I have a square and compass on my shirt, like, everybody knows what that means. Like, when you go out in public, it's a badge of honor. Like, people come up to you, they say hi, they shake your hand, they're like, oh, you know, you're one of those guys. It's never like, what's that symbol? Or, I think my grandfather was a Mason. It's never anything like that. They instantly know. It's part of, again, the culture of society today. So it feels good to represent something and to have that.
I mean, yeah. How many times have we been together? It's a status
symbol. Yeah.
How many times have we been together and, you know, we're hanging out and, our bar tab gets picked up, or the meal gets picked up, or somebody holds the door for us or something.
We're bigger than the Beatles. I mean,
bigger than the Beatles. It's just wild.
Yeah.
But we're bigger than the Beatles. Are we bigger than Jesus?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Billions of followers.
Yeah.
Billions.
So you talked a little bit about cosmopolitan nature of European masonry. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm wondering if you guys have traveled abroad and how that's worked out for you with the, you know, how American masonry and how top tier it is in the minds of the people here. Like, I, you know, been overseas, you know, in France, where the fraternity is very big as well. Mm-hmm. But curious if you guys have seen any other influences in other countries.
Well, I think we're inherently a little bit more secretive in the U.S. The one thing that I can liken it to is there was an experiment in Yale called the Skull and Bones.
Interesting.
I think it was very much an attempt to kind of capture the essence of Freemasonry and, you know, kind of the elite feel and clientele of it, but it just never really got off the ground. I think,
but there's already skulls in masonry, so
sure.
Why would you need another fraternity? Yeah, that's
well, and odd. You know, if nothing else, that circumspection, you know, translates very well to European and continental Freemasonry, especially in like Italy, where they are much more kind of circumspect about their membership. We are not necessarily circumspect about that here, but you know, we don't have people going and writing exposés on what we do behind closed doors.
Yeah, I'm really surprised to that point, Jason, that there really haven't been hardly any exposés at all, right?
I think the closest thing I've ever seen is, you know, something like illustrations of masonry or something like that at a public library. but nothing really that is expounded on, what goes on behind lodge doors.
Yeah, because there's not a need to, right? It's just like saying, like, oh, how come not everybody knows the secret formula for Coke? Well, that's their secret. We respect that. Same thing is true for Freemasonry. There's no need to rush out and try to, you know, show off some of the stuff that we keep secret. All because Morgan didn't write his book, so that's good.
Yeah. In our timeline, did mid-20th century totalitarians ban Masonry? Huh. What an interesting question. No, nobody's banned Masonry. We've been so boss all over the place.
Yeah, it's never been had a negative stigma.
Well,
writ large.
There was in 1789, or it might have been 1799, there was proofs on a conspiracy. But again, that's in Europe, right? In Europe, Freemasonry has been much more circumspect out of necessity, because there were several rulers within Europe who tried to pin Freemasons as scapegoats for the political climate and misfortunes that were being wrought by the aristocracy and the ruling class. And we haven't seen that as much here.
Which is good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's all I've got for the history of this timeline. Anything else you guys want to add? Yeah, you're on mute, RJ.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in this timeline, I don't know what a mute button is, I guess. I don't know what it is in any
timeline.
Yeah. It's almost as if had this Morgan fella wrote a book, or we have a very much large distrust of organizations and politics and everything else. I'm just glad we don't live in that world.
And now it's time to prune the branch. So let's get back to the primary branch. The timeline. Insert sound here.
I hope people got the artwork, a cool, super cool, technologically advanced future where Morgan was just a regular dude. Researching this was tough, you guys. I mean, you have to take so much hypothetical sort of situations and knowing, exactly how the actions and these trials and everything mm-hmm. else had affected the public's perception of not only Freemasonry, but the people who were trying the Freemasons, the people who were involved, the judges, the magistrates, the local constabulary, like everything was distrusted. And it seems to have just grown. And I guess granted, seeing that nothing else, if we had said, yeah, the Morgan affair never happened, and let's assume nothing like it ever happens either.
Right.
Right.
How perfect is this place we live in? I mean, obviously not super.
Well, and right. In doing research for the show, like, you literally have to just extrapolate from context clues. And so I think we've done a lot more research for this episode and the episode last week than we even do for regular episodes, because a lot of the regular episodes is fact and documentation driven,
and in this context, really, mm-hmm.
yes, in context, but this one really is like there is a heavy load of like synthesis of contextual information and like educated guesswork that goes into it.
Plausible.
Yay, forecasting, right? Yeah.
But also very fun to speculate and to kind of step outside the boundaries of what we know about Freemasonry today and kind of ask the questions whether or not things truly would have been better or, you know, worse had these things happened. And that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think we naturally, I think for the those of us on TMR, I think we're naturally optimistic. And so, you know, I understand our bias is to paint more of a rosy picture of the organization, you know, especially when it comes to forecasting. And so, you know, I feel like this is kind of the good ending.
Yeah.
More of the end game, Vice Infinity War.
Yeah.
But it's still a lot of fun, and it's a good thought exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that like the Baltimore Convention was brought up last week on our first one, and we're like, yeah, I mean, still could have happened, but let's assume that there was no impetus for the Baltimore Convention, unlike if the Morgan Affair never happened, right? If the Morgan Affair never happened, there really would be no catalyst to drive the Baltimore Convention writ large.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I think, you know, going back to kind of our discussion on, you know, the first third party, you know, there's still a debate in my head over how much the Morgan Affair, you know, was the catalyzer for that anti-Masonic party, because it was very politically oriented. They hated J.Q. Adams and they hated, you know, Andrew Jackson even more. And so even though John Quincy Adams was kind of an anti-Mason, you know, he just wasn't, you know, yeah.
He went along with it.
Yeah, he wasn't, you know, super friendly to Freemasons. But, you know, I have to wonder if not for Morgan Affair and the increase in anti-Masonic sentiment of the 1820s and 30s, you know, would these political actors have chosen a different, like, third-party issue to actually become the catalyzer for their third party?
Yeah. Maybe not by 1828, but at some period in time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because there was still a political desire to kind of get out of the two-party system. Maybe even exists today in this two-party system.
Yeah, this duopoly we have. Brother Kenneth here has a good point, I guess. So, did the Morgan Affair need to happen to shape Masonry today? It's this. Oh, now you're getting down my like rabbit hole of like time travel theories, right? It's kind of like which came first, like the Morgan Affair or not? Because did it have to happen?
It did. It did happen, and it did. The Morgan Affair piece, you know, did happen. Although I don't think anyone has ever conclusively proved that the Freemasons did, you know, off William Morgan. But the fact of the matter is the anti-Masonic sentiment on the part of the public was real and was true, regardless of what happened or what actually happened to Captain Morgan. So it did leave an indelible mark on Freemasonry.
Yep.
Yeah, one might think about the quintessential time travel paradox, right? Like, by avoiding the thing, you negate, like, if you travel back in time to stop the thing from happening.
Right.
If you succeed, then you negate the reason for you to travel back in the first place, meaning There's no way to avoid the current version of reality. So if we, if we're here today, and let's just pretend for a moment that if it wasn't Morgan, something else would have happened.
Yeah, so some other gentleman would have written an expose, exactly. Yep.
Which brings us back to, you know, Jason, and not directly, but tangentially speaking, a third party would have eventually popped up.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It could have, right? I'm fuzzy on how big of a catalyzer the Morgan affair was to the anti-Masonic party, or if they would have just like attached to something else.
Or if you like go back in time and do the nasty and the pasty and become your own grandfather.
Take it easy, Fry.
Yeah.
That was for you, Jason.
Fry has a delta wave that he's bringing from the fact that he is his own grandfather.
On that note, let's wrap up this episode.
I don't want to live on this timeline anymore.
Take it away.
As is the best, that's the best Professor Farnsworth I can do. So, really good thought exercise, just like last week. This is something that, again, I've told the guys, and I'll tell everyone else, you know, as we were thinking about doing a What If series, I was like, this is either going to be genius, or it's going to be just the dumbest damn thing we've ever done on the show in 10 years. I think we've hit somewhere in the middle. We do have moments of brilliance here, but if nothing else, it's a great thought exercise. And if I'd really be interested, especially for those listening and those watching, to hear your thoughts on, you know, where would we be and what, you know, could we be if, you know, the Morgan affair hadn't happened, if the ancients and moderns never reconciled, if for next week Freemasonry was always co-ed. Right. And so, yeah, you know, spoilers, right? But, you know, please feel free to take an active role, especially in the chat. Send us an email at themasonicroundtable@gmail.com. I would love to hear your input and hear what you think, because this is a thought exercise that we can all participate in. And by working through this thought exercise together, maybe we can figure out how to better the fraternity, you know, today into tomorrow.
That's deep. Yeah. How about you, RJ?
Well, as always, just the conversation and the ability to, as Jason put it, have a great thought exercise in this brings a lot of perspective. It actually brings out almost like some gratitude, even though there are, you know, bad things that have happened in subsequently from this butterfly effects, you know, throughout time and to get to where we are today. I'm very grateful for what we do have today and the system we have today, and overall the way Masons have I can't always say like I feel like we've done the best or we made the best decisions, because obviously we have enough you know, people can point out innumerable problems with the craft, you know, but all that, not, you know, not talking about those things, I suppose. I don't know that I would change much based on the experiences that I've had and the relationships I've been able to form with folks and travel. And it's been a very positive experience for me. And so, yeah, just a lot of fun with the thought experiment. And I look forward to continuing those in the next few episodes. And just a fair warning, I know there's going to be folks triggered on this series, man. So bear with it.
That'll be fun. Can't wait for next week. Yeah, so I've enjoyed this. Again, it was fun to think about if there was not an anti-Masonic dent in our membership. Like, what would that look like? So it's that hence the plug at 2140, which is really fascinating, because then the question doesn't become, you know, are we refining, not dying, right? It's like, are we, what does the quality of membership look like if we're allowed to grow at a, you know, pretty rapid pace. And so that's always interesting to, again, try to look into the crystal ball and see, you know, what if, you know, we had such a large amount, what does that do for its own structure, right? We talk a lot about the Masonic cultural impacts to the general population, but we really didn't address much of what happens when Masonry is that big. You know, what if, when it is so large, that do we need more infrastructure to take care of things, right? Do we have a better social safety net for our own members? Like, do you have lots and lots of lodge buildings all over the place because we can sustain them? Like, there's a lot of things that we could go and explore in that. But again, I still like our timeline. It's still fun with warts and all, because that makes us who we are today, right? As RJ was talking about that, I thought about the kind of a paraphrase of a Stoic quote, which, you know, the obstacle is the path. And so because we have these things that we have overcome, it shapes our character. So I'm really, really happy for that. This has been a fun episode. I've enjoyed the series so far. Let's keep it going. You guys have been having a lot of fun in the chats too. So keep that up, because it's always fun to see your perspectives. With that, that's all I got. See you next week. Thank you very much for watching, and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.
Wow.